All right, folks, thank you. It's 10:30. We're going to get back to the program. I'm going to introduce Richard Gertson. He is currently with the City of Arlington. He's their Assistant Director of Planning and Economic Development. This is my first time meeting him, but reading through his bio, he's apparently a planner. He has a law degree. He has a master's degree. He's worked as a city attorney. He's worked as a city administrator, a city manager. I don't know what he can't do. Today he's going to educate us on land use nonconformities. So please join me in welcoming Richard Gertson.
Thank you, Ted. I guess really the question is, what can I do at all, right, with all of those things? But it's my pleasure to be here today and to join you. It is my honor to talk about land use nonconformities today. So I'm going to say at the outset, I'll be talking about the land use nonconformities, not so much the structural, even though for all those in the room that, like me, you're practitioners in day-to-day code administration and so forth, you deal with a lot of structural nonconformities as well. But I'm going to be concentrating on the land use nonconformity side of things. Okay. Just getting oriented to the all the slides looking at me right here. Okay. So after a brief introduction to this, I'm going to talk about the basic nonconformity rules that is going to ring true with just about everybody in here, I think. You know, things that you have either dealt with or you're familiar with. And it's all about, you know, balancing the rights of those who have pre-existing legal uses that are no longer conforming to the codes in their in that particular area where they're located, and balancing that with the community's land use goals. I'll touch upon amortization kind of quickly, really talking about the two seminal cases here in Texas that established it firmly for us in terms of how the courts have looked at amortization and the recouping of investment by the property owners. Then what I really want to get to is talking about Senate Bill 929 from the 88th session of the legislature 2 years ago that really impacts all of us in terms of how we are going to deal with the nonconforming uses, both the procedural side as well as some of the substantive issues that we have to deal with. And then hopefully, and I'm going to certainly try to do a hard stop here at the end of my time frame here, but I want to get to just talking really quickly at least about, from my perspective, the importance of local folks who are in the regulatory side of things in working with and around nonconformities and not being so concerned about either, well, we're going to have to leave it alone or else we're going to totally eradicate it. There's lots of middle ground to be had in that area. So let's just start with the real basic, and that is the nonconforming use. We're talking about a use that was lawfully established before the zoning regulations were changed, and it's been continued in regular use. I still run into a lot in my profession as a planner that believe that nonconforming really means anything that doesn't fit the code, okay? But indeed, it is something that was legally established when it started up. At the community scale, nonconformities are the result of implementing a plan, a vision. And that's an important aspect of the rationale that kind of underlies all of our efforts to work with and change nonconformities is to get conformance with a plan. Conformities are, to some degree or another, a problem kind of our own making. Intentional, yes, when we are targeting a specific land use that is detrimental to the plan or the corridor or the district that we are trying to change the look and feel and the land uses that are within that particular district. Some are unknowing. In fact, I think these are the kinds of nonconformities I typically deal with, and that is we adopt a code for an area, and we unknowingly sometimes sweep up as nonconformities those uses that are out there. We're unfamiliar with it, especially in